Yes, indeed. And this morning, I am joined from the University of Minnesota by Professor Mary Meyer. Good morning, Mary. Nice to hear from you again.
Good morning, Denny. Yes, great to hear your voice and talk about gardening. We have a beautiful weekend for gardening.
And I'm looking at the forecast as I have been all morning, and having had some landscaping work done and needing to replace some of the some sod, and I guess I picked a pretty good month to do that. However, there's no rain in sight, so I guess it's a watering issue.
Yes, watering certainly with a new sod is important. We were lucky we got some water, but
yeah,
we could use some more rain, that's for sure.
But this is for folks that maybe want to call in or text in. By the way, do that. The number is 651-461-9226. That's your city's one plumbing talk and text line, 651-461-9226. And if you're a regular listener to our Smart Garden Show, you know we tend to get really busy really fast. So any kind of a lawn or garden question, by all means, do it now. Call or text so we won't run out of time before we have a chance to help you out. But as far as lawns go or seeding, I know we're going to be getting questions about that. This really is a pretty good window of opportunity in this area, isn't it?
Yes, it is. This is our prime time for renovation of lawns, reseeding, aerating your lawn. This is the perfect time to be doing that. Most of the weeds will start to decline if they haven't already because of the drier conditions, but not as many weeds are germinating now, so you have a good advantage for the grass. And we normally will have cooler conditions for the next 30 days or so. We think the ideal time to seed lawns and do the renovation is August 15th to September 15th. With our milder fall conditions, we've been able to go a little bit later than that now in the fall, but this is perfect season for lawn renovation.
And you and your colleagues, what kind of grasses, cool weather? How do you term it?
Yeah, we call them the cool season grasses because they do grow best in the spring and the fall. They tend to go somewhat dormant with the really hot weather conditions. But the cool season grasses, we really like the fine fescues and recommend them a lot. They are a lower maintenance grass. They're shade tolerant, but certainly love the sun conditions. But they do well with lower water and fertilization. So those are the kind of no-mow lawns we talk about now. But perennial ryegrass, as well as Kentucky bluegrass, those are the three, the fine fescues, perennial ryegrass, and Kentucky bluegrass. Those are the three components of lawns for Minnesota and the northern United States because they do grow best in cooler weather conditions.
Mary, there's a text about fertilizer, winterizer to be specific, but they're asking what three numbers should I be looking for on my winterizer now? I know what they mean, but explain to our listeners what the three numbers are.
Yeah, so any fertilizer that you buy will declare the nutrient value, and that's the amount of nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus. Nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, so N, P, and K. And in Minnesota, we have a real high levels of phosphorus in much of our soils, and you don't need phosphorus. So you will find many lawn fertilizers now that will have a very low middle number or sometimes a zero in that number. And that is usually fine for most soils. Most turf grasses, lawn grasses need nitrogen, that first number, more in proportion to the other two ingredients. But we do recommend people get a soil test. If you've never had a soil test, understand really what are the nutrient levels of your particular lawn, garden area. You should do that, and the University of Minnesota does that. And then you really know how much fertilizer to use. We do recommend lawn fertilization in the fall because right now is a peak time for root growth for lawns. So nitrogen and nitrogen is the main ingredient they need, but your lawn might need phosphorus, not very few do. And then potassium is sometimes needed, but again, not always. But we know the fall is a great time to be fertilizing, and I still use a predominantly slow-release fertilizer that will be available for several weeks at a time rather than a fast-release one. And the slow-release fertilizers are the more expensive ones because they are not as readily available, and then they last over a longer period of time.
And like Mary, you suggested earlier in the show, it seems like this is a good time of year for a lot of things like aeration, more now than even in the spring. Am I right?
Yes. There again, aeration really is a specialized machine that removes small cores of the soil, throws them out on top of the soil. Anyone that's in the sports field maintenance business or golf course maintenance, this is a regular thing that's done on professional ball fields, etc. And this time of year, again, is ideal because the grass is growing quickly and the roots are forming, and it helps to rejuvenate the grass. It also helps on compacted soils, especially sports fields that get a lot of compaction on top of them. But usually to do aeration, especially sports fields that get a lot of compaction on top of them. But usually to do aeration, you have to rent an aerator. Many rental companies will do that. Or if you have a lawn service company, they have lawn aeration equipment as well.
Yeah, I tried to do that myself once, and it was... and the aerator was, well, it was a little, fortunately, my wife was there to help me, and I don't think she threw her back out, but it was, some of these machines are not light. They're pretty heavy, and sometimes
it's
better.
Yeah. But, and you will find some aeration tools that will tell you, oh, you can do it by hand with a rake-like thing, but it really doesn't work very well.
No, you need
it. It takes quite a bit of power.
Yeah, absolutely. Call or text if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question. Now is your chance, 651-461-9226. Here's another one before we take a quick break, Mary. This texter says, we've cleared our four-acre woods of buckthorn. Now raspberries and blackberry bushes are taking over. What's the best way to remove them and getting them to not return?
Well, raspberries and blackberries, yes, some people would like those. They're really desirable because they will fruit, and you can get fruit if there's enough sunlight now in that area. You know, rather than focus on how to get rid of the raspberries and blackberries, they're relatively easy to use, a broadleaf herbicide, or just keep cutting them back. And they're relatively easy. I would focus more on what to plant in the area that will compete with raspberries and blackberries and be the native shrubs and trees that will grow instead of the buckthorn. You will deal with buckthorn for quite a few years, even after you take it out, just because the seed population, the seed bank, and small plants that will still keep coming back. But I would think about native trees and shrubs to plant in there, dogwoods, viburnums, many of our native trees, if you want to go with large trees and so on, to really replant in the area. Because raspberries and blackberries, to me, they're almost a temporary crop that will come in there. And then you need some permanent shrubs and trees. So I'd focus a lot on replanting.
Okay, very good. I'll tell you what, Mary, let's take a break. If you're just joining us, Mary Meyer from the U of M is answering your lawn and garden questions this hour. If you have one of those, call it or text it, 651-461-9226. We move back to 60 degrees, our current Twin City temperature reading. Beautiful day. Sunshine today near 75, sunshine tomorrow near 75, and Labor Day sunny near 78 degrees. We'll be back up to 86 by the end of the week. Right now on CCO, fair skies, 60 degrees. Stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you on this Labor Day weekend. We're back to our Smart Garden Show, welcoming your lawn and garden questions for Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, answering those questions this very morning. We have callers, Mary. We have texters. Let me give the number once again, 651-461-9226. Tell you what, let's do this. Let's go to another Mary, this one calling in from Minneapolis, I do believe. Thank you, Mary. What is your question for Mary?
I have a large area of ferns and lily of the valley that I need to eradicate, and I'd like to put down a chemical to eradicate them. And then on top of that, I would plan to put newspapers down and wood mulch on top. But I'm concerned about what kind of chemical will be safe around my serviceberry tree, three arborvitaes, and hosta.
Okay, Mary, so really you want to get rid of your ferns and lily of the valley, and then you're going to put a mulch on top of it, I think, but you don't want to hurt these other plants that are around it. So, yeah, you can use something that's the glyphosate Roundup that will kill on contact and go down through the root system. It will kill the ferns. It will kill the lily of the valley. It doesn't spread nearby to other plants. It's taken up by those green tissues that you spray it on, and then it doesn't move or stay in the soil. So you could use Roundup. I'm actually wondering if you cut off everything with the ferns, depending on what kind of fern it is, that might kill a lot of ferns. If you cut off everything that's there, cover it up with newspaper and cover it up with mulch. I think the fern, you might kill a lot of it that way, just doing that. The lily of the valley, not so much. That lily of the valley is a big persistent plant. It's got a tremendous root system, and it's going to be hard to kill that without chemical killing it or removal of the lily of the valley. But if you use glyphosate, that it kills on contact with the green tissue, and it does. It should not hurt your serviceberry, your arborvitae, your hostas, as long as you don't put it on them. You know, make a real concerted effort. You just put the chemical directly on the plants you want to kill, and don't let it drift over to anything else.
All right, very good. A few years back, this texter says, we have had to take a tree down, have a dip in the yard now. What steps should be taken to build a mounded flower garden?
You probably, yes, have that dip there because of the disintegration of all the roots. So the stump and then the roots right around the main trunk of the tree, yes, sometimes can cause a dip in the soil. Well, if it's a significant dip and you really want it level, you can bring in other soil. Obviously, that would take care of it. It really depends. If you have good drainage, you don't really have to change that unless it's just too much of a difference in elevation for visual aesthetics or to care for the area. But plants could still grow in that uneven surface. That's not going to determine whether or not the plants grow. It's more a visual thing if you like it. But I would just say any weed competition, you have to worry about that. And make sure that you do have good drainage. If you don't have good drainage, you'll need to consider plants that like poorly drained soil, standing water, or wetter conditions, things like the ostrich fern, gooseneck loosestrife. They're very tolerant of poor drainage, but from a plant viewpoint, you don't really need to correct that dip. It's more of an aesthetic thing for you.
Let's go back to the phones, Mary. I think Helen is calling in from Mayor this morning. Thanks for waiting, Helen. What is your question for Mary?
Last summer, we had bees in the grass, and my neighbor said, well, don't you try to spray those, I'll take care of that. I'll take care of your bees, which he did and got rid of them. But now no grass grows on that area. And I was wondering what that could be. Oh, I don't know what he used to get rid of the bees, but...
Yes, well, whatever you used to get rid of the bees obviously killed your grass. You know, sometimes something really simple like really hot water will kill bees, ants, etc., but yes, it will also kill grass. So, you know, you might ask them what they used, but you could also try replanting that area now. If you have good seed to soil contact, you'll get good germination. So if you can see the soil that's there and it's a bare area, I would rake it up with a garden rake and then use grass seed right now this time of year. Keep the area moist for a couple of weeks, usually 2 weeks, and hopefully you'll have new grass seed coming again.
Excellent. Hang on, Mary. We're going to take a look at that forecast, and we have about another half hour of the show to go. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, don't wait. You can call it in or text it in at 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. In the midst of our Smart Garden Show here on 830 WCCO11, the forecast, as we said, coming up. Stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you on the Labor Day weekend show, the Smart Garden Show underway here on CCO. Denny Long here along with Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Mary, you and I talk often, as we do on this show, about the Arboretum, and we urge folks to get there. And one of the reasons I brought that up is I just, as we took this break, got a text from my daughter Tina, who said, I'm at the Arboretum right now. Walking the paths and taking photos of all the beauty. What an oasis, she says. What an oasis. That's really true, isn't it? Especially if you have never been to the Arboretum. You know, there's so much to see. This happens to be one of my favorite times of year. How about you to get there?
Oh, yes. I'll tell you that some of the displays are really jaw-dropping. And when I saw the annual flowers... earlier this week, it was just amazing. Dwayne Otto is certainly a wonder, our landscape gardener that plants the annuals. So this year's warm colors. So it's red and orange and yellow. It's just amazing. If you like bright colors, the annual garden is just absolutely spectacular right now. And then the hydrangeas. Oh, my gosh. There are so many different hydrangeas. And to see them in the different gardens as well as out in the hydrangea collection, they're just really spectacular. Fall mums and asters are starting to bloom. The clematis collection has some beautiful clematis. And the apple house is now open.
Oh, it's open now.
So, yeah, it's open. It opened, I think, the 25th or 26th of August. So you can call the apple house number, find the number online. It's open from 10 to 6, and it will be open through November 5th selling apples. So Sweet Tango and Zestar, some of the numbered apples are available now, as well as squash and maple syrup.
Mm.
Maple syrup that's produced at the Arboretum in the spring. And there are many things with apple related that you can buy at the Apple House. So the Apple House is just west of the Arboretum. You don't need a reservation to go to it. It's just like going to a retail store. It's just about a mile west of the Arboretum. If you do go to the Arboretum, you still need to make reservations. Members are always getting free, but reservations are available. Hundreds of people can go every half hour, and it's just a fabulous time to walk and see the beautiful flowers at the Arboretum.
Boy, especially after listening to this, looking at this forecast, a beautiful week to head to the Arboretum, sure. Well, Mary, you mentioned earlier the word hydrangea, and I'm looking at a text that you is it too late, this text just says, to plant a Bobo hydrangea? I have not heard of that. Have you?
Oh, Bobo. Yeah. Now, Bobo, what an unusual name. I'm not really sure where Bobo came from, but this is a short hydrangea. It's like 2 to 3 feet tall, big normal flowers, the big paniculata hydrangea with a big flower on it. So it's quite spectacular. Many people feel all paniculata hydrangeas are so big that they're kind of like small trees, but the Bobo is little. So, it's not too late to do that. You could plant many things now using containers. Plants grown in containers have a great root system. We like to have a month of growing conditions, and we are right with that right now. So container planting still a great thing to be doing.
All right, very good. Let's grab a phone call this morning from Ken, who's calling in, I believe, from Blaine, Minnesota. Ken, what's your question for Mary?
Good morning. I have a redbud tree that I had planted maybe about 4 years ago or so. And, it's not a huge tree, of course, because I planted it when it was quite small. But I was actually away in August having knee replacement surgery, and I came home here at the end of August, towards the end of August, and the foliage on the redbud tree was all brown. I mean, the whole tree. And what do you think the problem is?
Well, it's hard to say, Ken, but I would say the first thing I would think about is really the amount of water or how dry it was. We've had 2 years with below normal rainfall. This is the second year. And even though we do have some rain, we are still up 6 inches in many areas of the state below normal rainfall. So 4 years, you would hope a plant would be established by that time. But many times if plants don't have enough water, they will start shedding some of their leaves early. So we see this on the ash trees, many other trees. They're usually yellow when the leaves drop. They're not usually brown. But hopefully the plant will come back from that. The other thing I would urge you to do is inspect the plant, especially around the trunk, see if there was any damage or anything that physically would have affected the bark, to see if you can see any wounds or damage on it. Sometimes plants will come back from drought conditions. They just go dormant early and then will come back again in the springtime. If you don't have any green leaves on it now, I'm not sure how beneficial it will be to water it, but if it has been quite dry, I would still go ahead and water it. The root system, the plant itself, might still be alive, and then hopefully will come back again next year. But it is certainly something to remember next year. Is this plant going to be dead or alive?
Okay. This listener says, can I reuse the soil that I used in my vegetable garden? I want to use it in pots where I've grown in the garden tomatoes, cukes, and peppers. Can they reuse that soil is the question.
Yes, I would certainly try reusing the soil. I would try to make sure that you don't have any plant debris in it that will actually encourage diseases, like the tomatoes that get so many leaf spot and blight diseases. We try to practice good sanitation with removing those diseased parts of the plant, put that into a commercial compost or in trash and so on to get rid of it. But as long as you've removed the diseased plants, you could reuse the soil.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones, Mary. I believe Dorothy is calling in from Minneapolis this morning with a question. Thank you, Dorothy. What's your question for Mary?
Good morning. I have two burning bushes, and I know there's another name for them, but can't think of that. Anyway, they've kind of grown out of, they're way too big. Is it okay for me to trim them now, or should I wait until next spring?
Well, it's probably better if you do it next spring, Dorothy. A burning bush is a euonymus, a shrub that we saw a lot of winter injury on not long ago. It's really kind of puzzling, because that is a very hardy plant. But a couple of years ago, we saw many of those plants die back to the ground. So pruning in the fall can encourage new growth. That's not going to be as hardy in the through the winter, and it could remove some of the resources that are in that plant. So I would wait until the springtime to actually do the pruning.
Okay. Listener says, thank you for the gardening show. What's a safe way to get rid of leaves with mold and powdery mildew? Is it safe to compost those?
It's safe to compost them if you have a really hot compost pile. If your compost pile is in the sun and small enough, and you're putting a lot of ingredients in it that decompose quickly, if it has moisture and so on, if it's really active composting and getting hot, yes. But many of us don't have those ideal conditions here in the north. And so municipal composting systems in the yard waste will generate enough heat to kill a lot of the diseases. But otherwise, you can look on our yard and garden website. We do talk about that as home composting and how to get rid of diseased plants. You can bury them in a site that is not close to where your other plants are. Powdery mildew is pretty ubiquitous. It's everywhere. So it is hard to really clean up from those conditions. We see that on peony, phlox, monardas, and weather conditions play a big factor in how much of that we see. So it really is hard to get rid of it, but commercial composting is the best alternative.
You know, as we head to this quick break, Mary, maybe we should mention the University of Minnesota website, such a great resource. Tell us about that.
Yes, extension.umn.edu. We have lots of timely information written up there. You can belong to the Yard and Garden e-news, get the newsletter in your email regularly to tell you what to do in gardening. But you can look up many, many different things there. The recent articles we've had, tomato diseases, things to do in the fall. There's information about the giant pumpkins that Julie Weisenhorn grew. Probably many people saw those at the state fair. This is some of the biggest pumpkins I've ever seen in my life. That's a fair this year. Just unbelievable in size. But all sorts of gardening information, what plants to plant, etc. extension.umn.edu, and click on Yard and Garden.
A lot of great information. Hang on, Mary. We'll take this quick break and be back on the other side with more of our Smart Garden Show. Here's the number to remember, 651-461-9226. Back with more. 60 degrees now in the Twin Cities. Stay with us. And good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show on this Labor Day weekend. Denny Long, along with Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, answering your lawn and garden questions. Well, we have a few minutes remaining in the show, Mary, and a bunch of text messages. Let's see how many folks we can help out here. Here's one that says that they need a recommendation for transplanting a yellow lady slipper plant to our new home. Any suggestions?
Oh, good for you. That's such a beautiful plant. Wonderful. I would prepare the new hole where you're going to plant it to get that ready so that when you bring the transplant in, you can put it in right away. Try to get as much soil as possible. I would make sure that the plant is well watered before you try to move it out. So it's unlikely you will be dealing with too much water, but so even the day before and even an hour before you dig it up, I would put water on it, because the water will help the soil stay with the roots. So just get as much of it as possible when you're transplanting it.
Okay. I have been growing tomatoes, this listener says, for many years. Now I'm growing two plants in large pots on my patio. I always remove the partially red tomatoes and let them ripen inside. They always have white, hard centers. What's wrong, do you think?
I would guess it's the variety that you have. We do see some strange things with tomatoes depending on the weather conditions and the water availability. But there are tomato disorders specifically that tend to go along with genetics. So I would consider changing the varieties that you have. Some of the old standards, I like Early Girl, Jet Star, Celebrity. Those are consistently very good performers in the garden. They're not real big like the beefsteak tomatoes, but they produce a lot of consistent mid-sized tomato fruits, and they're all disease resistant. We actually have an article on that, tomato disorders, that's in the on the Yard and Garden website. So you can see that at extension.umn.edu.
Very good. A listener wants to know, Mary, is this a good time to move hostas?
Yes, you can do it now. Hostas are starting to decline a little bit, but they're still, of course, growing. If your hosta is in flower, that's a kind of a tougher time to move them because so much of the resources are up in the flowers and the leaves. Ideally, you can do it in the spring, but I just dug some hosta the other day and divided them. So you can do it pretty much any time of year. Just make sure you water them well afterwards.
Okay. I have to do that myself this week. What's the best way to overwinter salvia, listener wants to know.
Overwintering salvia. Well, there are hundreds of different kinds of salvia. And many of the ones that we grow here, yeah, they are perennials further south. I have not overwintered salvia. I suppose the easiest way to do it is keep it growing like a geranium. Many people overwinter geraniums in a sunny location throughout the winter. You could try putting them dormant. Leave them outside until it starts to really get quite cold. Then if they're in a pot, just take the pot and everything and put it in a location where they will not totally freeze and just see how they do next spring. You could also try taking cuttings and getting the cuttings to root inside and then just growing the cuttings on.
Okay.
Good luck.
Yes.
I think it's doable, but it's somewhat tricky.
Susan from St. Cloud sent a text this morning saying, for this fall, what order would you do the following? Aeration, reseeding, winter fertilizing. And wouldn't this also be a great chance to check out the university website for that whole program?
Yeah, it would. I would do the order that she listed there. Aeration first, then reseeding, and then the fertilizer.
Okay. Good luck with that, Susan. Thank you. This listener says, my phlox have taken over the perennial garden. Best strategy to eliminate their overgrowth short of digging them out.
That's about it. Digging them out, you can repeatedly cut them back. Phlox has a tendency to self-seed, and little seedlings will start coming up, and many of the seedlings will revert back to a magenta color. And yeah, you can get a big area taken over by phlox. It's quite an aggressive perennial. And in some ways that might be good, but you really have to be careful. You see that in old homesteads where no one is taking care of an area, it could just become a big mass of phlox. So I would say watch for those seedlings, take them out, and they're relatively easy to dig out. Although they do get a big root system, but be vigilant. That's the only thing I can say.
You mentioned the word homestead. Just a reminder to our listeners, next hour we'll have our home improvement show. Andy Lindis answering those home improvement questions. So keep thinking of those and give us a call or text next hour. This listener, in the meantime, Mary, said, when should endless summer hydrangeas be pruned? How much should they be cut back?
I think people worry too much about pruning endless summer hydrangeas because you really don't need to do it at all. Unless you are really happy with how the plant looks. But otherwise, really, you don't need to prune it. Endless summer is one that will bloom on new and old wood. And so you risk cutting off the blooms if you do any pruning on it. So I have one. I don't prune it at all. So that might sound like a cop-out, but I think that's really the best thing to do is really don't worry about pruning it.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, we have so many. I mean, let's find somebody who is still waiting. What could I plant, texter says, in between my very old honeysuckle bushes, a hedge? Since I can't replace my honeysuckle because it's considered invasive. All right, they want some ideas.
So other ideas for other shrubs besides honeysuckle. Well, I really love the diversity we have with dogwoods and viburnum. You know, our native viburnums and dogwoods, I think, are underplanted. They don't have that many disease or pest problems. They have flowers on in the spring, often fruits in the fall for birds. So there, I would consider dogwood or viburnums. There are many different kinds of lilac. And of course, there are hundreds of kinds of hydrangeas because there's so many different sizes and shapes of hydrangeas now. So if those are not of your liking, I would also say go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, and lawns and landscaping, and you'll find many resources there.
Absolutely. Yeah, check it out, extension.umn.edu. Mary, we are out of time. Thank you so much again for all your expertise. I hope to talk to you soon, and I hope you have an enjoyable, it looks like a nice sunny Labor Day weekend to get out there and do some gardening.
Yes, I'm going to do gardening. I'll see you in 2 weeks, Denny. I'll be on again. So
looking forward
to it. Always a
pleasure. Thank you, Mary. Mary Meyer, Professor Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Yeah, we'll be back, of course, next week with more Smart Garden every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. As I mentioned earlier, get those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindis next hour, our home improvement show. Sunny today, near 75. That's the same for tomorrow. Right now, it's 60 here on CCO.